This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Carry on my wayward son, there'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest, don't you cry no more.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another edition, a thrilling, chilling edition of the Sellers Points podcast. This is going to be one of our favorites, I think, because we are finally going to get to the long advertised, much anticipated segment that is the Missed and the Maligned. That's right. This is going to be the first time you ever hear us go in depth on a book that either has been missed by the large amount of fandom or is largely, as the name suggests, maligned and hated. So, with that in mind, this first edition is going to be about a really great book from Dark Horse Comics called Beasts of Burden. But before we get there, we got the usual that we do, well, at least it's going to become usual because, hey, Kelly, how you doing today?
Pretty well, thank you.
Hey, there's Kelly. My favorite ginger bear is joining us. sounds like his mic is bouncing back and forth.
Sorry about that. I had to adjust the mic because it was not dealing well. There we go. That feels better.
You know, that's generally how we feel on a Tuesday. It's right about that time of the week when we've gotten through Monday, but we realize just how far from the end we truly are. And we just want to slump over like Kelly's microphone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I feel. That's how you feel. But, hey, we're going to try and elevate the mood a little bit by talking some comics. And as was brought to our attention, Kelly, our podcasts have tended to go a little long, haven't they?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, last week's, I think, was the longest we've had, but I think that was kind of, you know, I think we've reined in for the most part. You know, I think last week was the worst of the lot as far as just, you know, going over.
Yeah. We did get a little long-winded there, so Mr. Nick Duke, your criticism is well-founded there. But instead of going Peter Jackson level this time, we're going to try and rein it into a different type of Peter Jackson. A little less King Kong, a little more Frighteners. Which is fitting, since this is going to be more of a Halloween-type episode. And, you know, that's great, I think. Because we touched on it a little bit the last time. You guys, if you joined us for our Guide to Batman episode, you need to go and check that one out. It was a fun time recording, and you really don't want to miss my awful Jack Palance and Jack Nicholson impressions. I mean, they're something. Kelly liked it.
Mm-hmm.
and there, from that resounding endorsement, we'll move on to our first bit of the show, which is we'd like to tell you a little bit about the comics that we've read over the last couple of weeks, but we decided to change things up a little bit. Because as most of our regular listeners know, we've been doing this thing where we each picked our top two and our bottom two for the week, and we've also given you little tidbits of news items. Well, we're not doing that anymore. And the reason is because, well, it can be a little difficult getting through your pull list. And, let's face facts, the Hard Traveling Fanboys have got that kind of thing covered. They're doing a weekly show. They're covering the news. You guys want to hear the latest? That's where you need to go. Check them out. It's a good show. And they're doing a Walking Dead month all month long. also fitting, you know, right in with that Halloween theme. So you definitely want to check that out. But for our part, what Kelly and I are going to do is we're going to do what we do best, and that's talk shop. We're going to tell you about the books, the things that stood out to us from all the comics that we managed to read during the week. Now, of course, we're not going to get to every single book we read. That would take for friggin' ever, and then we'd be right back into King Kong territory. So let's not do that. What we're going to do instead is we're going to go down the big three, that being DC, Marvel, and Image. We're going to talk about the high points, if you will, from each of those companies. And then at the end, we'll talk a little bit about any books that we might have read outside of the main continuities, or any from the other independent publishers. And we might hit you with a little bit of standout stuff from television as well, because, as we all know, dear God, all the comic book shows are back. And we're all finding out just how hard it is to watch all of them now, because the market has gotten a little flooded.
You know, I'm just sticking with the pretty much the core CW. The things that I was watching last year, I've pretty much... I'm picking up a few things on Netflix that I just can't manage to get a hold of, just watching it per season on Netflix. But yeah, it can be kind of daunting.
It really can. And Walking Dead hasn't even started yet. It starts this weekend.
I can't wait for them just to do it. So I'm tired of seeing the, you know, who's going to get clobbered in the noggin with the old baseball bat.
I'm so right there with you.
Just like, go ahead, let's just get this done and just stop it.
The only thing in the world that is more frustrating and has lasted longer than this goddamn presidential election is the buildup to who the fuck Negan hit with that bat.
I really wish he would have hit Clinton or, you know, Trump. I wish Trump and Hillary were down there and he would just say, fuck it, hit both of them.
I wish that he would sub out the entire cast for pretty much everyone who's written a think piece telling me why a certain member of the cast has to die at the hands of Negan in that scene. I was like, can we just line up all of these terrible think piece writers and let Negan hit each one of them in succession? Because that would make me so happy.
If we can get, you know, Negan to just hit whoever we want. I've got a list. I need to dig it up somewhere, but yeah, I've got a list of folks I wouldn't mind, you know, getting cracked in the noggin, you know, once or twice.
Which would be a far more entertaining piece of media to read than any of the ones that have been published.
Yeah, I get the suspense. I get setting it up, but wow, it just like every time I open up Facebook, it's got some, you know, next week, blah, 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 Negan's going to crack someone. I'm like, yeah, I've known this. Let's just shut up.
Or say, why Negan killed Maggie? Why Negan killed Daryl? Why? Did anybody write one on Carl? Because where's my where's the one where it says Negan had to have bashed Carl's head in?
You know what? You know what's going to be worse than this is the aftermath. It's literally the aftermath is going to be the worst part, because it's going to last even longer. People bitching because it's going to be a bitch fest.
It is. Yeah. I mean, if you go by comic book accuracy, it almost has to be Glenn, right? I mean,
I mean, and you know, they could go that staple and keep it close to the book. But then again, it's like, well, you know, we're trying to keep our comic readers who are loyal and who have been reading this, maybe just throw a twist their way. You know, which would
be fine, which makes sense. Yeah. I mean, there's no way it won't be spoiled for me. I'm a whole season behind. I haven't even watched season six yet.
Mm.
So
same. I'm catching up on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do that eventually. But you know, let's get past Walking Dead. I said, Hard Travel Fanboys, they got that covered. Go listen to that. They're actually doing the Walking Dead Compendium this week. Doing a Long Book Hunters. That's going to be one that I can't wait to listen to, because I think it's Greg's first time reading it.
Yeah, check them out, because that, I mean, the Compendium itself, I mean, that's
a good book.
That's a good book. And again, it's price wise. I mean, you buy the compendiums, you're like, they're like three compendiums out, which basically covers the whole series. And I mean, I got my cousin one because she's a big Walking Dead fan and she'd never read the comics. And so I just said, look, I'm going to get you a compendium one.
Yeah.
And she literally tore through it with like in a couple of days and was like, oh my God.
it doesn't take long because that first one especially reads incredibly fast. But speaking of things that read fast, we had a lot of single issues to read this week, I'm sure. I know I did. Actually, the books that we've read from the last couple of weeks. So without further ado, let's get into our actual readings. And this first segment, of course, since we are big DC fans, DC comes first. This is the DC Rebirth Report. So, Kelly, what stood out to you over the last couple of weeks? Like, what's a book that really just that stuck with you?
I've got to say Wonder Woman. I read issues 7 and 8, especially 8, dealing with kind of going into some more detail about Minerva.
Barbara Ann.
Yeah, I mean, it
a little poltergeist for you.
When you Carol think Ann. About Cheetah as a character, she's always kind of just been thrown into this, she's a Wonder Woman villain, but they've really gone that extra mile with her this new relaunch. And I really like what they've done with her. I never really cared much about her prior to this. I mean, she was just a villain. I didn't have anything against her nor for her. But this actually made me this beginning story, this first story arc has really gotten me to kind of care about her. And one of them has just been constant. There hadn't been any issue I had put down and went, God damn. I mean, that's even above Hal. I mean, Hal is the next book that I would say, even against my man, she's standing pretty much above him as far as just, don't get me wrong. I love what they're doing with the Green Lantern books, but Wonder Woman is just killing it. I mean, they're,
I'm right there with you. I think that Wonder Woman is, has been like one of the big standout books of Rebirth. Certainly one that I consider to be one of the smartest, if not the smartest, Rebirth book, especially, the Lies story arc, which has been brilliantly paced, written, and Liam Sharp's art has just been incredible. I mean, that guy is turning in probably the best work of his career.
Yeah, and it's great. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is again a constant. Has been on the high adventure side, just knocking it out of the park. Seeing Hal just kind of getting in there and doing what he does, and then seeing the Corps, rallying behind him, trying to, catch up to him, and poor guy's getting the, crap kicked out of him, and he's still being Guy. Hey. This Yellow Lantern interrogator doesn't even know who he's up against. Has no clue.
He really doesn't, especially in this most recent issue when he's befuddled. He looks at Guy and is like, this is not going as I thought it would.
Yeah. I mean, you picked the worst of the worst to try and intimidate and interrogate and torture. Guy's one of the toughest SOBs in the Corps next to Kilowog, just a great, great book. And then kind of moving on to Supergirl.
Another good one.
You may not agree with me on this, but I get this kind of Borg aspect from the whole story arc that we just read in issue 2, where, her father has, kind of...
It does have a little bit of that resistance is futile thing going on.
Yeah, and that would, to me, at the end of it, I was like, wow, her dad, she's kind of... Argo, he went and saved Argo to an extent, but how, I mean, to what degree, and what are we looking at? I mean, that's fucking, I mean, that's, yeah,
you kind of have to wonder if it's really the essences of all the people from Argo City that he saved, or if it's just his interpretation of them. Like, yeah. Are they really sentient? Because Eradicator did something similar in the Superman book and the main Superman title when he supposedly had, like, the actual, like, essences, the quote-unquote souls of all these different Kryptonians stuffed down in himself. But yeah. When he tried to absorb Kal-El and take him the same way, Kal managed to turn all those different Kryptonian souls against Eradicator and launched a rebellion. So there is maybe something to that for what's going to happen here, I think. Maybe. I don't know. But speaking of that, like, Superman continues to be like the standout book for me in Rebirth.
Yeah.
I especially loved issue 8, which was the most recent issue that came out prior to this week's. Because we had the beginning of Escape from Dinosaur Island, which is paying tribute to the late, great Darwin Cook. And it's exactly what it sounds like. If you read Darwin Cook's New Frontier, it's Dinosaur Island. It's almost exactly that. It's very pulpy. It's very Silver Age-ish, but it still has a modern feel to it in the way that Clark and John interact with each other. That father-son dynamic is really the heart of the book. And it continues to be. Not to mention a killer rotation of artists, including Pat Gleason and Doug Monkey, who Monkey drew this issue. Just one of my absolute standouts. But there's been something strange happening lately, Kelly. I don't know if you've noticed it, because I don't know if you read either of these two books. But our loyal listeners will know that I've not exactly had a lot of praise for Flash, or at least this current run of it.
Yeah.
But the last, maybe four issues of it have been pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, I read, I think, 7 and 8 of The Flash. And, I mean, those to me were, you know, good reads. Really enjoyed them. I mean, it kind of felt like it's about time.
Yeah. You know? It really did. I was shocked at how much I enjoyed the whole thing with Godspeed. I think that he's got potential actually as a member of Suicide Squad, which honestly, the Suicide Squad book, I feel like, and I hate to say this because Jim Lee is who I consider to be like the best artist in comics. But I think the sooner we get him away from that book, the better it can be, because it feels condensed. It doesn't feel like there's enough room to work. And it's honestly, the backup stories have been more entertaining than the main feature to me, especially this most recent one with Gary Frank doing Harley Quinn. I thought that was pretty funny. Or it had its moments of being funny.
Yep. I always thought Godspeed was I always thought this name would be a perfect speedster name, and I'm glad DC nailed it and went ahead and copyrighted it.
it's cool. He's got a really interesting power, and he's definitely got a legit reason to hate Barry. So I'm like, he's like a speedster Punisher. So I'm totally down with this character.
Yeah.
But the other couple of things that I got to say about Rebirth in the last couple of weeks is Deathstroke continues to be a just tremendous book. So does All-Star Batman, which I feel like finally hit its stride with issue 3. I can't freaking believe I'm going to say this, but Red Hood and the Outlaws is almost the feel-good adult book of Rebirth.
I've seen the covers and I've seen stuff about it. I was like, man, I wish I could get it. I'm just going to pick that up and trade. I'm just going to do that with, like, Superman.
I don't blame you. Superman. Oh, come on, man. I don't blame you on Red Hood and the Outlaws, because I'm counting down the days to Scott Lobdell messing this up. It's going to happen, right? Eventually. It's got to.
Well, yeah. I mean,
that's his MO. But I mean, he did it with the first round of Red Hood and the Outlaws and Teen Titans. Superman, good God. But one last thing to say about DC Rebirth before we move on. Because, loyal listeners, you also know that I haven't had a lot of good things to say about Justice League. I'm going to change that right now. Justice League number 6, State of Fear Part 1, was the first good issue of Justice League in Rebirth.
Should have been issue.
Yeah. This should have been issue 1. This could have been issue 1, honestly. Maybe. It's got that feel to it. It's got the first couple pages will seem a little off, and they did feel a little off to me, but overall, this started off on a much better footing. I felt like Hitch had a better take on all the voices of the characters, and the artwork was elevated, especially from the previous couple of issues, which were not good. And it feels like there's an actual story happening here, like something's unfolding, and we're seeing the team work in tandem with each other. So that there is something to this. I'm going to stick it out for a little bit. I'm not ready to say you got to go get on Justice League. I'm not going to go there, but I will say that it got better, and I'm hoping that this story arc will prove to be, you know, an improvement over the previous one, which, as we all know, weren't good. But Kelly, any other Rebirth books that stuck out to you, good or bad?
No, I mean, pretty much everything I read last week was pretty much on point. It was good stuff.
And it's always good whenever you can say that about a book. Now, to move on to our next segment, we're trying not to be like total DC homers, and of course we just talked a metric ton about DC, but let's talk a little Marvel, Kelly, because I know that I think we've both managed to read a little bit of Marvel over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I read one title, mainly because I'm waiting for Hulk and Hawkeye to start up. They'll be added to my pull list. And I try to pull things off the shelf. So, I mean, I did pull off one book last week that caught my eye. And that was the the Great Lake Avengers.
That was a comedy book, isn't it?
Yeah. Again, my love for C-list characters kind of pulled me in. And these guys are great. Just whenever they give them a chance and they put them in a book, I mean, it's just... To me, it's funny. I mean, I get a kick out of them. And this issue, it's really funny because the character Flatman, who is able to stretch like, Mr. Fantastic, but he has to be flat in order to do it, had put in for some reference to have access to the Avenger copyright name for his group. And this was done, you know, a few years back. Anyway, something happened, and the Avengers have lost the copyright to their name, and the only, you know, it goes to the one person that still has a listing for it. And, of course, Flatman gets, you know, the Avengers trademark. He gets ownership of it. And it's just funny. I mean,
it's as ridiculous as it sounds. But
it is. And I mean, you've got Big Bertha, Doorman, Squirrel Girl hasn't shown up yet. Mr. Immortal is still kind of MIA, but and he's my favorite. Mr. Immortal's my favorite because the guy is just like an average Joe that just can't. I mean, he gets brutally murdered in different ways, but he comes back. He's like Kenny from, you know, South Park. I mean, he pops back up and doesn't really have any other abilities other than just being immortal.
I don't die. And you can, somewhere you can just, you know, imagine that somebody's going to wind up getting an Austin Powers crossover in here so he can just walk up to him and ask him, "Why won't you die?"
Yeah, I mean, it's It's, I mean, I don't know how long this book will go. I really, I mean, comedy books, it depends on how well written they are. And this first issue was a good start, kind of setting up the whole, you know, Avengers trademark and such. So, I mean,
I feel like, you know, Marvel needs some more. I feel like more comedy books are needed across the board, not just at Marvel.
I do too.
I feel like DC needs to get on it with a few comedy books too. You know, there's another one coming out this week called Slapstick. That's a Marvel book, getting a little bit of praise lately, and I'm just looking at the preview of it, and my God, this is the type of Looney Tunes level silly that is so up my alley. I mean, he's literally like foiling what looks like a gun running thing or a series of gun runners on a dock somewhere, maybe in New York. They fill him with bullets. And the next panel has him laying on the ground with X's over his eyes and him holding up a daisy and then looking at him. And then he pops back up and spits all the bullets machine gun style at all of them, like mowing them down. So he's a cartoon character, but he can actually kill people. It has a little bit of a cool world element to it. So I'm kind of digging that. I'm thinking, man, that's funny. It's Woody Woodpecker in the Marvel U. I can dig it. So, you know, why not? But some other Marvel stuff that I managed to read. Special shout out to Jennifer Smith of the Geek and Sassy podcast here on Place to Be Nation for hooking me up with her digital code to Jessica Jones number one. The new Brian Bendis relaunch of Jessica Jones. I gotta say, man, that book hit it out of the park. Just a tremendous read. Tonally, I have never read Alias before, so I was only familiar with the Jessica Jones character thanks to the Netflix show. But that's kind of what got me interested to try out the book. And when I picked up the comic, I was like, this feels very much like the TV show. But thanks to the miracles of Wikipedia, I was also able to go and check out some of Jessica's past so that I could understand what has happened to her up to this point, because they are picking back up into that continuity. And yeah, it's the same, right? You know, Brian Bendis wrote Alias. He wrote pretty much all of Jessica Jones' major points up to now. And this was one of the best things I read in the last couple of weeks. It was a strong contender for like my pick for the best book of the week. And like I said, it doesn't have all the same characters from the TV show, but you do get that same feel. Like the attitude that Jessica has, the way she talks to people, some of the language she uses, because this is not a kid's book. Like, it might be published by Marvel. It may very well be in their main continuity, but it is not for kids. It has a parental advisory right on the front cover.
Don't buy it for your kids.
No. Don't let your kids watch Jessica Jones on Netflix either. That ain't for them. That's for the adults in the room. And this comic is too. And that's what I loved about it. It's a comic that does not feel like it's trying to censor itself or trying to clean it up a little to be more palatable for a wider audience. It feels like, you know, a Jessica Jones comic should feel. So I'm totally in, so long as Mrs. Smith will continue to provide me with those wonderful digital codes, I will for sure keep reading that book, and I'll keep shilling for it, because, guys, you got to go check out Jessica Jones. That first issue is just tremendous, and I feel like it's off to a rousing good start. And hopefully sometime in the near future, I'll also be able to do a little catch up on, Old Man Logan, maybe get around to putting that as a regular part of the rotation. And of course, the next story arc for, the Mighty Thor is something that I'm really looking forward to, because we're finally going to get to the big confrontation. Like the War of the Realms really feels like it's happening. You know, Well, we're going to find out a little bit in the next issue. We're going to find out a little bit more about this new ability that Mjolnir seems to have mysteriously developed, which is a little random. It can apparently take on the form of a person. So that's
new.
Yeah, the hammer has revealed itself to be a sentient thing, and that actually explains a lot. So I'm curious to see where that goes. One thing I've got mixed feelings about with Marvel is what they're doing in Spider-Man right now. The whole clone conspiracy thing has revealed that, as far as this issue is concerned, or at least the information we have, it looks like Gwen Stacy is in fact alive, and no, she's not a clone. It's Gwen Stacy.
Who?
Yeah. I am just not sure what to make of that, or, you know, I stop it already. Stop bringing. But death has become meaningless in the world of comics. Like, if it's going to be that way, let's just don't kill anybody anymore. Just don't do it.
I've been preaching that for years, that that death in comics used to held some semblance and some, you know, some feeling and emotion, and it's now just a horribly used comic book plot that everyone is just jaded to it. When someone says, "Oh, someone died," I mean it's like,
yeah,
you know. And it doesn't hold any feeling, doesn't have any emotional grasp, you know.
It's like what's the point anymore? Just don't do it. And I mean, maybe that story will turn out all right, but you know, there was a teaser out that came out today that was just like, "Oh, Scarlet Spider's back," and I was like, "Really?" I click on it, and it was like Kane. I was like, that doesn't look like Ben Reilly to me. Pass.
Yeah.
But anyway, that little thing aside, and we won't even go into Inhumans versus X-Men because, well, that's a whole podcast in itself of us ranting angrily. But I digress. That brings us to the end of the big two. Let's move on to the Image Comics, because they had some really good stuff in the last couple of weeks. I know that one that I picked up, I picked this up off on a whim from the lovely folks down in Dothan, Alabama at Fanatics. They had this on their shelf. It's a little book from Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Rizzo called Moonshine. Now, this takes place in Prohibition-era America. And the basic premise is this gangster in New York who's you know, running booze, he gets a taste of this this hooch, as they like to call it, or hoosh, from way down south. And he sends one of his guys down there to negotiate getting this recipe for their clubs and their speakeasies, if you will, in New York. And when they get down there, well, things aren't all what they seem. I mean, on the one hand, it's got a little bit of a Deliverance thing going on. But in the opening pages, you see these like FBI types who have been like raiding different stills. They stumble across this one in the Deep South, and then they are subsequently mauled by some kind of giant animal. Hinting at, of course, that this is a werewolf story. That these people are running this still, they have a werewolf. And if the creative team sounds familiar to you, it's because you are probably a 100 Bullets fan. Because it's the same team. And it has very much that same feel. It has the gritty yet gallows humor feel to it. It's got a bit of a noir thing. So if you like like movies like The Untouchables, And if you also kind of dig an American Werewolf in London, I think this might be up your alley. Give it a shot. It's called Moonshine. One I highly recommend. Kelly, I don't know if you got it. Did you get around to reading anything Image this, the last couple of weeks?
No, nothing yet. I did see a few things that I kind of wish I'd picked up, but I, again, limited funds. I'm kind of my shelf pulling is kind of limited to about one book a week if I see anything, and that happened to go to Marvel with the Great Lake Avengers. So, but I mean, you know,
there are Moonshine is one that I'll recommend if you're looking for like what you know might actually turn out to be a good werewolf story for once. We're kind of running short on those. We don't get many of them, honestly. That's kind of in keeping with our theme, our Halloween theme here. Moving from that to a book that I've actually been reading since it started. It's on issue 3 now. This is a book from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips called Kill or Be Killed. And with this issue 3, it kind of takes a step back and doesn't really give us like a ton of like action happening in the book. But it gives you some extra depth to the main character, Dylan, and this girl that he's in love with named Kira. Kira also happens to be dating Dylan's roommate. Because, of course, she is. And ain't it the way. But in this book, Dylan is very much like Walter White or Dexter Morgan. And that he is clearly a villain, but you can't help but root for the guy because he is your eyes into the book. He is the point. He's the point of view character. So you immediately can relate to him. It's easier to see the world as he does because he's the one who's telling you the story. And as it goes, he's been through a lot. I mean, he's had kind of a tough go of things in the last few years of his life. He's back in school. He's kind of a non-traditional student. But he went through a low period where he attempted to kill himself by jumping out of a window. He winds up having his fall broken by clotheslines that are great between buildings. Doesn't die, but definitely severely injures himself. And starts possibly hallucinating after that. A dark demon that's visiting him, telling him that because he failed to kill himself, he owes lives for every day that he lives. Or he has to kill someone regularly, or the demon is going to come back and kill him. And at first, you know, he's just like, well, that's bullshit. I don't believe that. So he goes on for a little while not doing it, but he gets sicker and sicker. His body starts really breaking down. And he can't, you know, he starts to worry that, oh my God, is this real? And he goes out and kills somebody. I mean, he tries to pick bad people, of course, or people that he truly believes are bad. But it's, you know, at that time, after he kills somebody, he starts to feel better. And then it's like, oh God, could this actually be a real thing? But I love that in issue 3, he's still questioning it. He's still wondering, is this real? And Ed Brubaker plays that perfectly. He sets it up to make you, the reader, wonder right along with Dylan. Is this real? Is it not? And that's the brilliance of this creative team. And I mean, you know, these guys have done lots of books with Image in the past. So that's one that I absolutely recommend. It's only on issue 3 now, so it should still be pretty easy to get. It's got that really gritty noir type feel to it. So that speaks to me when it comes to some of these titles, but that's a winning combination. You can't go wrong with Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. So gotta highly recommend that. And one more book that came out, and Kelly, I'm going to tell you right now, man, I know that funds can be limited, funds are tight, and I know that several of our listeners probably also in that same boat. But there's a book out there right now that just came out last week that everyone hearing me right now needs to go get. This is a book by Mark Millar and Greg Capullo called Reborn. I picked this up. I had a feeling this book was going to be something because we've been teased with this book for months. All this time, Greg Capullo and Mark Millar have been like just tweeting it up on Twitter, talking about how they have really created something special. The artwork looked great from it. Of course it did, because it's Greg Capullo, and anybody out there who's familiar with he and Scott Snyder's Batman run know how good this guy is. This is Greg Capullo Unleashed. Because as you guys know, and Kelly, you know this, even though you can get bloody in superhero comics, there's a line. And you can't cross it. Right, when you write for DC, or like when you draw for DC, you draw for Marvel, there's only so far you can go. Image don't have that rule. And Greg Capullo takes the opening page to remind us of that. The opening page has a dude taking a sip out of his coffee, and a sniper bullet goes right through the cup and through his face. And then that same sniper proceeds to shoot everyone around him while this dude like basically just tilts back forward and stands there, bloody as he can be, maybe realizing he's just been shot. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But that's Greg Capullo. He really goes for it in those first couple pages. But to not let you think that that's all this book is about, no, this book, put simply, is about this lady named Bonnie, who has watched everyone in her life basically be killed or die of horrible circumstances way too soon. But she has lived to old age. She's in a nursing home, still smoking at like in her 70s. But she's on her last legs, and she is, understandably a non-believer. She's like, how could any God allow all this to happen to me and to happen to anyone? But she's not like bitter about it or anything. She's just like, I just don't believe in a fairy tale. But then, spoiler alert, Bonnie dies. But as Bonnie dies and sees her life flash before her eyes, she wakes up in a fantasy world facing down a horde of goblins, an evil wizard, and a giant freaking dragon. Not kidding. It's as crazy as it sounds. But that's not the point of the book. The point of the book is that Bonnie is going to be reunited with a lot of people from her life because they're also in this fantasy world. This is where you go when you die, according to this world, according to this comic. And it is a sprawling fantasy epic that I can't wait to read more of. I mean, the one thing that I will say that this book has that a lot of comics miss the mark on is it has a huge amount of heart. It's a character-driven story. I mean, you relate to these characters almost immediately. And enough can't be said about the just tremendous artwork from Greg Capullo. Just killed it. Loved it. Can't get enough of that book. I am in for as long as this book is running and as long as this creative team is on it. So hats off to them. Great book. Do not miss Reborn number one. It's out there right now. It's going to be a monthly book. I don't know how many issues. I don't know if it's a mini, a maxi, or if it's an ongoing. But like I said, I'm in all the way. I believe that brings us to the end of the big three. And the last thing we'll talk about is books that are outside of continuity for DC, Marvel, and also any like random indie books. Kelly, did you pick anything up? Anything weird or just read anything weird from the last couple of weeks?
No, pretty much. I pretty much have just, read DC and Marvel at this time. I'm hoping maybe tomorrow. Well, let me take that back. I did read Doom Patrol number one And
yeah, I've been waiting to hear this.
Tell people. I don't know what to say about it. It's rare that a comic will stump me in such a way or kind of jar me to an extent, but you know, I read it twice, and sometimes I don't know what I read. I mean, it was just so off the wall, but I mean, I'm going to go back and probably pick up the next issue. I think I'm curious to see, you know, like, okay, maybe, you know, I'm curious. So I'm going to continue to kind of follow it, but it really, and I was looking forward to, reading Shade the Changing Girl. And I've got that. I'll probably pick that up tomorrow. I think that came out last week or so, but, yeah, it was a very interesting read, but you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand how a story flows. This book just kind of weaved in and out of things. And I was left kind of perplexed and wondering at, you know, when I finished it for the first time and I set it down, I was like, wow, that, you know, I knew Vertigo's Doom Patrol back in the day was off the wall and kind of kooky and, you know, all that, but this just set the bar up even higher.
the bar for weird just got
way up there. And like I said, I'm not going to say it's not a bad read and it's not horrible. I guess I could say that it was a good read, but at the same time confusing, you know, but then again, it's the first issue, and like I said, I'm going to at least stick on for maybe the next couple to kind of get a grasp of what's going on. I mean, I kind of know what's going on, but it was, you know, and I like that though. I like the fact that it kept me kind of at the end. I'm like, what did I just read? I'm going to read it again. And if it had been a crappy book, I was like, I'm not reading that. That's going in the trash. Yeah,
at least you didn't be like, what did I just read? My God, that was a pile of shit. Garbage.
Yeah.
I got one like that. I'm not happy. I picked up a book on a whim that seems, on the surface, it seemed like it should work. Because if there are any two franchises out there that seem like they are just natural bedfellows, it would be He-Man and Thundercats, right?
Yeah.
Seems logical, right? It's two fantasy epics from the 1980s, great cartoons that you're like, man, can you imagine what would happen if He-Man had met Lion-O? This would be awesome, right? Well, you would think. But I picked up issue one. I got halfway into it and thought, I wouldn't use this for toilet paper. That's how bad that book is. It's not fitting to wipe my ass with it. So, I threw it in the trash. Not even a little kidding. That's where that book belonged. Because the writing, the art, all of it was pure garbage. And I don't mean it was like it felt dated because it was trying to capture the spirit of the 80s. No, that would have been one thing. I could have accepted that. No, I mean that the narration was written in first person like it was being narrated by some weird-ass 90s punk kid who's experiencing He-Man and Thundercats for the first time. And I'm just taken aback, like, this is dumb. This is so completely stupid. Like, it's incredibly distracting. And not only that, I'm normally one to praise Freddie Williams II because I like his artwork. I really loved what he did on Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is a crossover you should go read. But here, his artwork was just a big, muddy mess. And not only that, but sometimes character positioning just was off the wall weird. Like when Prince Adam gets up to start running, I swear, I don't know how you draw a body to contort like that, or how I'm supposed to believe that his legs naturally move like that. But if he does, that kid need leg braces worse than 10-year-old Forrest Gump. Jesus. It was bad. Just straight up terrible. I do not recommend you go and buy that book. Please, please save your money. If you're a He-Man fan or a Thundercats fan, do yourself a favor and don't. There have been good He-Man books published by DC. They were written by Keith Giffen. If you can go find those, read that. That's good stuff. And if you know what? I really wish Keith Giffen had been the guy writing this series, because it would have been so much better. I would have stuck with it then. But you know what? Nope. Wash my hands of it. I'm done. But DC did publish something else that is outside of continuity. That's in the prestige format, Kelly. This is something different. It's basically like a little mini graphic novel. It's called a Dead Man, Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love.
I saw something about that.
It is the... don't let the title fool you. It's not porn. I mean, it kind of sounds like porn. I mean, the more I look at it, the more I'm like, is this a comic or is this a, you know, supermarket, like, romance novel? It kind of has that name going on. But, you know, fittingly enough, in keeping with our Halloween theme, this is actually a haunted house story. And
interesting.
Yeah, that's what I'm digging about it, is that it's a haunted house story. And this book, like I said, is in prestige format, so it's like a little mini graphic novel. It's almost a trade size. I mean, this thing is really thick. It's like two issues. It's like two comics in one, and it's at, you know, $5.99 a pop. It better damn well be.
Yeah.
It's also done on some, like, really high quality paper. And there are no ads in the book at all, which is a welcome change. I really dug how Boston Brand was written here. I don't have a long history with Dead Man, but I thought that this was done pretty well. I felt like I could just pick this up and go with it. The lead female character has apparently the ability to see ghosts, including Dead Man. Like, she can see him whenever he's not possessing a body. And they can communicate back and forth. And apparently there's this dark entity that has made itself known inside a house that this girl and her boyfriend are living together in. And it's not only seemingly holding them, or like maybe going to hold them hostage, but it's also holding other spirits inside the house hostage. And that's where Boston Brand comes in, because he heard their cries for help and came to try and help them out. So it's got a pretty big mystery floating around it, and it's got some genuine, like, chilling stuff. So if you're a horror fan that's looking for some, like, ghost stories within the DC universe, I recommend this Dead Man, Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love. Don't let the non-porn title fool you there. It's actually a very straightforward book with some pretty gorgeous artwork, honestly. So I'm thinking about coming back for more of this. That first issue, like, stood out to me. It kind of grabbed me. That's another one, Kelly, that I know you may be trade waiting, but when that comes out in trade, I think you'll dig that. I think you're a Dead Man fan, right?
Yeah. I that's one of those ones that I think, you know, I would definitely enjoy from what you said about it. And yeah, I'm, again, you know, a fan of Dead Man. He's neat. and a fitting, you know, character for Halloween.
Exactly. You know, like, we're in the Halloween season, and well, that kind of brings me to the end of the books that I wanted to mention. And I mean, it was a good week. It was a good solid. Actually, it's been a good solid couple of weeks since we've been talking to the people, Kelly. And
yeah, it has.
I feel like it's been a really good couple of weeks for comics overall.
Yeah, I agree.
But before we, you know, we got one other thing to talk about before we take a break. Because all the TV shows are back.
Yeah.
And we've gotten through the season premieres of all of them. Some of them have had a couple of episodes. And I know which show is standing out for me, and I know which show that I finally just had enough, and I will no longer be watching it. But, Kelly, I want to ask you first, what show stood out to you? Which show is working for you most this season so far?
After seeing the, you know, Arrow premiere, the Flash premiere, and the Supergirl premiere, and the Legends of Tomorrow premiere, I would have to say Supergirl stands out by far. Just that episode, I pretty much had a smile on my face through the whole. I mean, it just really, it was just a fun episode. You could see how much the actors had being there and playing, you know, playing those characters. The lead actress, Melissa, is that her name?
Yeah, Melissa Benoist.
She's adorable. I mean, she just, you know,
she
in a lot of ways, she to me, she's like Stephen Amell, because Stephen really has embraced Arrow. He's embraced that character, and he really believes in his character. And I think she's the same way with Supergirl. She enjoys being that character, and she really portrays it just extremely well, and it comes out in her acting. Cat Grant has always been a favorite of mine since the beginning. I didn't think I'd like her. I thought she was just going to be the, you know, bitchy character, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, they really wrote her extremely well. She's you know, a few episodes in, you start seeing the little character flaws she has, and you start kind of seeing there's depth to this character. She's not just being a bitch for bitch sake. She's just this phenomenal character, and she's not a bitch. She's just a hard-edged woman who fought her way to the top, and she knows she made it herself. She didn't have, you know, she owned it, and you know, she's just trying to, you know, teach, you know.
She just has absolutely zero time for your shit.
Yeah, it's like, let's just do this. You know, there's no time for any crap or like, you know. But that's my top show, I think. I would say running second would probably be Legends of Tomorrow. I really, really enjoyed it. It was really funny to kind of to see. Maybe not my second. Let me take that back. There were a few things that kind of. The only thing that really bothered me about Legend of Tomorrow was the fact that it felt really rushed in certain aspects, like getting everybody together, everybody back. That was kind of thrown in the time. It was like, boom, 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 we got to do this quickly. And I understand why, because you can't spend – I mean, your whole episode will be wrapped up with, you know, getting everybody back in the fold. They had to do it quickly. But it just felt really, really rushed and kind of
– Yeah.
And there's no – I don't think there's any way to really do that without feeling that way.
They were kind of left without many options there, because end of season one, you had that big tease for the JSA.
Yeah.
And then when season two starts and you don't have the JSA, and like if you were to drag that out for like six episodes or something where you go and like get all the team members back, I think people really would start to get – I think they'd be more irritated by that than – by the way they did it, which was just to go ahead and put the whole team together.
I think Flash would be my second, and then Arrow, and then probably Legends, I guess, will be fourth, just because of that situation.
I can understand that. Like,
Heatwave, though, just basically ran that episode.
He did.
His character has another one that surprised me. I thought he would just be another hulking brute. Just, you know, and his character just is just awesome.
Yeah, they're starting him out on a good note in this second season. That was something that I was pleasantly surprised by, because I was with you. Like, I didn't see Heatwave as being somebody that I cared much about. As far as like that whole cast is concerned, I was far more invested in Sarah.
I was invested in Captain Cold. I love that character.
Yeah, Sarah and Captain Cold were like my two favorites from season one, as well as Ray Palmer, because I love that character. Yeah. And surprisingly enough, I got really into to Rip Hunter's story as the season progressed. Not at first, but as it progressed, I started to care more about him. And I've really been taken aback by how well they've developed Heatwave. So, you know, hats off to the folks over at Legends of Tomorrow. They did a great job making that character somebody I could care about. I'm curious to see where the rest of the season goes, and I was nerding out pretty hard whenever Stargirl appears at the end of that premiere episode. I just about lost my shit.
It was cool to see. I think they had Dr. Midnight, yep. Stargirl, Obsidian, Commander Steel, I think.
Yeah, like all these people just appear, and I was like, holy shit, it's the JSA, and this is awesome. I was kind of, like I said, I was nerding hard. But I'm also with you there. Legends would be fourth for me. It was the one of the CW shows. It was the one that I enjoyed the least, but that's not to say that I didn't love it.
Same here. It was just the technicalities they had to deal with to get to where they were was really the rough patch for me. Yeah, and I think Flash was the most emotional out of all of the season one.
I felt Flash definitely had like those emotions. But for me, the number one show is Arrow, starting off this season, because it finally, fucking finally feels like we're getting back to that.
The old Arrow.
That formula that we had that worked so well in seasons one and two, where Ollie is having trouble splitting his time in the dual identity. Like, he's finding out that struggle is difficult, especially when you're trying to be mayor.
He's a shitty mayor. He's about as shitty as the one we have here in Enterprise. Sorry, didn't mean to say that. If any of you fans out there are fans of the mayor of here in Enterprise, I totally didn't mean to offend you.
Yes, he did.
But he is shitty. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Kelly totally meant to offend you, but because you are offended.
But, yes.
I do know the mayor of Enterprise. He seems like a nice guy. But I don't know how the policies are treading there. But anyway, Arrow has seemingly refound that footing that worked from season one and season two. And not to mention the fact that the flashbacks actually feel relevant this season. Like, they parallel the main story beautifully. You see the reasoning behind the decisions that Ollie's making in the present day are affected by this situation that he went through in the past. Like, it ties very closely together. And I noticed in the second episode of the season, not just to his story, but to other characters as well. Like, the stuff that's happening to him kind of parallels with what's happening with Diggle as well.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is the kind of writing that needed to be back on the show. And also, can't say enough good about the fight scenes. They back.
Yeah.
It feels so much better.
Scenes are so much. Yeah, I definitely agree. They're a lot better.
I was so happy to see the fight scenes back on track. I'm loving Tobias Church as kind of that anarchist like villain. He's got a little bit of Joker, a little bit of Two-Face going on. I'm digging that. It kind of blows my mind that that's Tyrese from Walking Dead. And after seeing the second episode, I think, Kelly, the fan theory that I talked about with you is I don't have any more evidence to add to it. But yeah. I'm still thinking that it's Tommy Merlin under that mask of Prometheus.
Yeah, I mean, when you told me that, I couldn't. I tried to think of other people too, and I think pretty much you I think you've nailed it. I mean, to an extent, I you know.
There's one other guy it could be in my mind. It's either Tommy Merlin or it could be Lau Fei.
Yeah.
And yeah. That, I know that seems crazy, but hey, Tommy Merlin was dead too. Now,
yeah, I, you know.
Now, and of course, Flash is killing it this season. Like we were just talking about, like so far, I mean, things are wrapping up a little on the fast side, I think, as far as, that's funny to say. Yeah. Things are moving a little fast on Flash.
Well, I think when I read somewhere like the Flashpoint was only going to be like a couple episodes. It wasn't going to be like the whole season.
It was one.
Well, I mean, technically, yeah. I mean, Jay's appearance just... there has to be more Jay appearances in this season.
Yeah.
Because that whole little talk between him and him snatching him out of the Speed Force, I was just literally like, oh my God. Jay is so cool. He can just go, get your ass over here.
Yeah, it was like, come here, boy, sit down.
Come here, we got to talk.
I wish he'd done it in Foghorn Leghorn voice.
Yeah.
Like, you're missing the point, boy. There's a hole in your glove.
His costume is so, I mean, just spot on.
It's iconic.
It is. It's really like they went all out to do his costume justice. And I think out of all of the shows, I think this one, you know, especially with Cisco, you know, seeing Cisco in that area where you rarely see him in that kind of just, I mean, I was like, wow, this is a tough one. You know,
the actor that plays Cisco has had to do some heavy lifting because he's having to swing wildly between different versions of his character so far.
Yeah.
But I will say this, I want billionaire Cisco back. I want to see more billionaire Cisco. That was, I mean, 80s ponytail and everything. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
But anyway, with all the good that we've talked about this season so far, there has to come some bad. And Kelly, after three episodes, I finally had it, and I removed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from my Hulu queue.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Gotham.
Say it with me now, all of you at home. Miranda, that means you. Hashtag Gotham sucks.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the three episodes that have been out, has still got my interest. And it's all because of this whole...
I am shocked.
This mystical... Well, for me, it's the fact that they're not shoving Inhumans so much, you know, down my throat. But the whole mystical side, and even, like, I didn't think Ghost Rider would be in any way interesting to me, but he kind of is in his story. So I'm just going to give it, you know, just until, like, you want to, if they just completely drop the ball in an episode where I'm just like, I'm out, I'm done. You know, I think they mentioned the Darkhold, which I think was in the second episode, and the Darkhold is this magical tome, or I don't know how they're going to describe it, but it was used a lot in the Doctor Strange book years and years ago, along with the Book of Asante. I don't know. It was one of those books that Doctor Strange in one of his story arcs from years ago where he destroyed all the vampires on the world, at least when 616.
Wow.
But it, to me, that's the only thing that's keeping me is the whole mystical side. And, you know, the characters, you know, they're all the same. There hasn't really been a whole lot of... I do like the fact, though, that Coulson's out in the field. He's not director. And this new director isn't Inhuman. He's kind of been modeled after the Patriot, who was kind of took over from Cap, took over when Cap disappeared way back when. So, like I said, there's some interesting things that are kind of keeping me there, but it's a fragile, you know, it's a fragile kind of
And after experience. All that demand to have it included in the worst TV shows ever.
Hey, you know what? I watch a lot of crap. I mean, I'm a B-movie fan. I mean, shitty movies. You know, you used to come by and hang out with us on Saturday night there at my house a couple of years back. And
I will watch crappy movies. Forgive you guys for Cabin Fever 2.
Yeah, you were there for that. You're like, so, I mean, I can deal with crap. But it gets to a certain point where I'm like, okay, as a series goes, I'm not wasting my time. And maybe, I don't know, this might be the season. I'm just like, okay, I'm out. I'm done.
You know what? If you can keep going with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like this, one day we're going to sit down and we're going to rewatch some Lois and Clark together, buddy. It's going to happen. Jennifer Smith is going to be there, too. So is Greg. They're going to tie you down, and they're going to make you watch some Lois and Clark, and you're going to love it.
We should probably try to get the whole crew together at some point in time and rewatch some older series.
I'm down.
The hell of it, you know.
I'm down for this. Let's get some folks on the podcast and let's all stream some old comic book shows together and see how they hold up. That would be fun.
We should do that for maybe an episode or something, as a you know, special. You know.
You know what, listeners, you heard it here first. We're gonna flesh that idea out eventually, but. But aside from that one down note from Marvel, my Marvel show is going to be Luke Cage this season because I've watched two episodes of it so far. So, I have loved it, and I'm eventually just going to sit down one weekend when there's time. When there's actually time, I will sit down and I will watch all of that while not doing my shitty Twilight Zone Burgess Meredith impression. So,
can I say that Luke Cage has a terrific vibe to it?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it just, you know,
that Harlem Funk vibe. I love it.
It's all of the Netflix shows have found instantly their niche, I think, and Luke Cage followed suit. I mean, that first episode, I was like, this guy who's playing Luke Cage is brilliant.
Yeah,
this guy's just, you know.
Mike Coulter is a superstar.
Yeah.
He is the guy that, man, they found the perfect guy to play Luke Cage. Just nailed it. Love this guy. Love everything they're doing on that show. And I wish I could be in the room when Nick Duke finally watches that first episode. Because, well, the conniption he's going to have over one particular scene when Luke Cage has, well, air quote this one, coffee with a certain other character is just going to inspire a rant that I wish I could witness. Oh, to be a fly on the wall. That one's going to be fun. But anyway, that brings us to the end of this first half. So you guys, thank you for sticking around with us this whole time. And if you're waiting to hear our second half take on a great, great Dark Horse series of one-shots called Beasts of Burden, you can catch that in our second half. So when we come back, that's what we're going to do. We're going to dive right into it. It's going to be a good time. And Kelly and I are going to tell you all about this series that you've probably never read. Or if you have read it, nod along with us because you know you want some more of this. So you guys stick around and listen to these wonderful commercials as we go pay some bills, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Going to be your beast of burden. Kelly might. You guys can't see this at home, but Kelly is absolutely doing the cock of the walk. He got his lips poked out and everything. I mean, this is a Jagger impression like you've never seen. It's kind of, come on, embrace it, Kelly. Embrace your inner Jagger. But I'll never be your beast of burden. But I'm also not going to be your boy, so let's not go dancing in the streets just yet. Let's just let's go talk to the people about some other comics, some things that maybe they're not so familiar with, because everybody gets a little too familiar when it comes to Jagger and Bowie. We're all a little more familiar than we ever wished we would be, but you know, sorry, David Bowie, all the David Bowie fans out there. He's a great artist who has missed. But in any case, speaking of missed, you guys have probably been wondering, what is this missed and the maligned business that you've been talking about for the last several episodes? Well, to give everybody a little quick recap, Kelly, it's a pretty simple concept. There are sometimes comic book stories out there. Sometimes they're published by Marvel and DC, and lots of other times they're published by somebody else that fall through the cracks and people miss out on them. But then they hear about this book later because fans talk them up. Well, that's what this episode is going to be about. On the other side of that would be books that are books and stories that are maligned, that maybe have been hated by the majority of the fandom, sometimes justifiably so. So on these types of episodes, sometimes we'll be looking at something that a large majority of fandom has missed, or something that they either unjustifiably or even justifiably despised. And that's not just about comics either. We're going to be doing that for TV shows. Speaking of which, Kelly, that's when we're going to tie you down for some Lois Clark.
Okay.
we're going to force feed Kelly some Dean Cain. He's going to love it. That sounded wrong.
Very wrong.
Like we discussed in the bottom five, you know, Dean Cain did fight the Battle of the Bulge, and I think he won. He might have the, you know, Lil Dean was having some fun there. But anyway, this edition of The Missed and the Maligned is all about this wonderful, wonderful series of one-shots and maybe one mini-series from writer Evan Dorkin and artist Jill Thompson called Beasts of Burden. And the concept is pretty simple. It's a story about a group of dogs, neighborhood dogs, all have owners. They're not a bunch of strays.
And a cat.
And a cat, yes. There are kitties in the story. And they handle supernatural happenings in and around their neighborhood called Burden Hill. Hence the name, Beasts of Burden. And it has kind of a fable type thing going on. As Evan Dorkin originally pitched it back in his original idea, he said he wanted to pitch it as a haunted house story, but he wanted to pitch it as a haunted doghouse, which actually became the pitch for the very first Beast of Burden story that was ever published, called Stray, which did in fact have a haunted doghouse. Mm-hmm. Now, Kelly, before we get too deep in the weeds on the story and the premise of the book, what is it that you liked about this comic? Like, why? I know that whenever it was coming out, or whenever it was first published, actually as a side story in an anthology series called Dark Horse Book of Hauntings, what drew you to the story? Why did you enjoy this one?
I love animals, you know, and, you know, I guess a lot like when I first saw Mouse Guard, seeing this group of characters that are all animals and that they're fighting supernatural forces in their neighborhood, I was like, okay. I mean, I've liked shows like that. I've liked, just liked the concept. And, being, you know, at the time I had my shop, again, I was like, this I've got to order. I've got to order this for the shop because I want to read it. And I'm pretty certain that this book will do well. And it did. It did. I got a lot of people hooked on it.
A lot of people slept on it too, though.
Yeah, a lot of people did sleep on it. I mean, I didn't order a whole bunch, but I mean, a handful of folks I managed to get, hey, you need to check this out. One of my customers, Joe Johnson, was one of the ones I think I pointed it to.
I think we got Miranda on that book too.
Mm-hmm. Miranda was another one that I think maybe I spoke to, maybe you did, about because eventually, I mean, they did a bunch of one-shots or miniseries, and they compiled them, in a really nice hardcover, and I think it's still available that you can get.
Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, it's and the nice thing about it, too, and this is the shop owner in me, it's a $19.99 hardcover that literally dwarfs most hardcovers in that price range. I mean, when you buy a Marvel or a DC hardcover for that, it's very thin, and this is like well done, and you get everything. I mean, it's yeah. right there.
Well, almost everything.
Everything.
The great thing about that hardcover is called a Beasts of Burden Animal Rights, and right spelled R-I-T-E as in last rites. If you're you know, familiar with Catholicism and having someone read you your last rites, but the it collects a good bit of the Beast yeah. of Burden story. Like, it starts off with the very first Beast of Burden story ever published, called Stray, that we mentioned before. Yeah. Yep. Also has The Unfamiliar and Let Sleeping Dogs Lie.
Yeah.
And
A Dog and His Boy.
A Dog and His Boy also has the four-issue miniseries, The Gathering Storm, Lost, Something Whiskered This Way Comes, which is a personal favorite of mine, and Grave Happenings. Like, all of that collected into a beautiful hardcover. It's kind of an extra-size hardcover, too, because the pages are bigger than your standard comic, so that the layouts are, I guess, brighter. They pop a little bit more. You see a lot more of the detail of Jill Thompson's artwork as well. And it's a high quality hardcover. I'm really impressed by it. I've had my copy of it for years. Of course, I collected the miniseries as it was coming out. It was one that, actually, Kelly, you pointed me to that book when it was coming out in miniseries. 'Cause the first thing I ever yeah. read was, Beast of Burden number one, which was, the story, The Gathering Storm. And when I picked it up, I wasn't sure what to think. I was like, okay, what's this? It's talking dogs solving supernatural mysteries that are actually supernatural. So it's not quite Scooby-Doo there. It's not like they're, you know, going to...
It's not Old Man Withers behind a mask.
Yeah, yeah. You're not getting the old creepy Ferris wheel operator behind the...
They do an homage to The Walking Dead, and that's all I'm going to say because it...
That was what took me by, not that part, but what took me by surprise in The Gathering Storm was this is the story when they face off against the demonic frog.
Mm-hmm.
All the frogs are like raining down from the sky, and they're like, you know, what's going on here? But then all of a sudden, one frog eats another, and then another eats that one, and it just kind of balloons from there to the point where you have this gigantic, disgusting blob of a frog that is talking about eating everything in the world. They have a giant tug of war with its tongue, between the tongue and the dog, so it's dogs playing tug of war, which is hilarious. And then a cat comes along and puts this frog's eye out, and it basically explodes into a bunch of little frogs again. It's disgusting, but that's part of the tone of this book that took me by surprise. Was this was way more over the top than I expected it to be. So I had to keep reading this. But I think it was more than that, though. I mean, it was more than just, you know, the gross out factor, which was done in a way that was as beautiful as it was disgusting. It was also the heart of the characters, because I felt like this series is one that has some really strong characters to speak of. And that's another thing that really stuck out to me. Who was your favorite character in the book? I know who mine was, but
mine was Whitey, the little Jack Russell Terrier.
He's adorable.
He's just adorable, and he's just, you know, he's like a Jack Russell Terrier. He's just, let's do this, let's do that. You know, he's
a ball of energy.
Yeah. And I mean, all of the characters are really good. I mean, don't get me wrong. All of the characters I think are really well done, but I think Whitey is the one that I kind of latched onto, while I read the series. He's just my favorite. you know.
I actually had like several favorites within this because, you know, I am a dog lover, and this book is definitely made for dog people. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also made for cat people too, because I mean, there are plenty of moments for the cats to, you know, have their hero and villain moments. It goes both ways there. But a character that sticks out to me every time, mostly because he plays the coward, yet he begrudgingly goes along with things, and he's also a bit of an ass. Hence that he kind of reminds me of, like, people I know in person, and that would be Pugsley the Pug.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's when he lifts his leg and pisses, that
yes,
screws the whole ritual up. Just, I mean,
brilliant.
I mean, you know, he's comic relief, but he's not just that.
I mean, they write these characters as if they could be human characters, but I love that they also do stuff like that to always remind you they're dogs.
Yeah.
They're still dogs. And yep. They do dog things. They talk about chasing their tails. They talk about, you know, like burying bones and you know, going after cats and like sniffing each other's butts, which is another thing that, like, oh God, when they're trying to form the circle of power.
Yeah, circle of power.
And Rex is leaning in to sniff, and it's like, will you stop sniffing my ass? And he's like, I'm sorry, it's a nervous habit.
And I think that was Orphan actually had to step in and help them with that because they were down somebody or...
Orphan is the tomcat in the story, or he's the only watch cat, as they call him, because the group is eventually adopts the name the Watchdogs, which is given to them by a pretty important character in the book named Emery. Emery is the old wise dog, and that's basically, if you're I'm trying to equate what the wise dogs would be to people who have never read this story, but essentially they're like an old order of almost like wizard or witch dogs or whatever, who look out for, like,
if you're a Buffy fan, they're the Watchers.
Basically, okay, they would be that.
I mean, I don't know what the equivalent would be in Supernatural, because
I would say Men of Letters, maybe.
Yeah,
that's as close as I can come to it. Like, if you were to look at it in terms of Supernatural, the Wise Dogs would be the Men of Letters, and the Watch Dogs and the Watch Cat would be Hunters. They make a point to go out and, like, take care of the supernatural happenings in their neighborhood, in and around their neighborhood.
They're the Scooby Gang without the humans.
Yeah, in a way, yes. And like Kelly was saying, like, it has a little bit of that Buffy thing going on, but it also has a heavy amount of Supernatural. So if you're a fan of those particular shows, and you also happen to be an animal lover, which I would think those things kind of go
match.
Kind of go hand in hand. There you go. I would also say, like, if you know what it's really like? It's really a combination of those things with Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey.
I'd agree. You know, when we talk about shows and things that we'd love to see, I would, after reading a few issues of this, I wanted to see an animated version of this. I would love to see, like, you know, an original animated Dark Horse Presents Beast of Burden, animated series or animated show or something. You know, I mean,
it could work. It really
movie
would work.
Or something.
It really would work as a series because it kind of lends itself to that. Given that each issue really is a self-contained story. And that's
the great thing about it, too, is that, I mean, you could pick it up at any time, any issue. And that was a good selling point for me, you know, back in the day. I was, you know.
And that's another thing I love about it was whenever I came onto it, I came in to the mini, the four issue miniseries they did, and I had no idea that there had been more of these stories prior. But as I'm reading that story, I'm finding out that, oh, there are other things that have happened before now. And when the hardcover came out, that was the first time I got to read those short stories from the prior issues. Basically, all the stuff from Dark Horse's Book of Hauntings and Dark Horse Book of the Dead and the Book of Monsters. So they did, like, well, I think it was Book of Hauntings, Witchcraft, Book of the Dead, and Book of Monsters. And each had a Beast of Burden story in it. And I didn't know that my favorite Beast of Burden story was actually going to come from Dark Horse's Book of Monsters. That was A Dog and His Boy. That was the one time they did a werewolf story. And a pretty damn good one, too.
Yeah.
It's also...
That's my favorite story.
It was kind of scary, too, wasn't it?
Like, yeah. I mean,
it's tense.
I didn't realize. I didn't pick up on it, which really pissed me off when it's revealed what he is. It was right there in front of me the entire time. I mean, he understands them. He can hear them. He can communicate with them. Communicate. But yeah, the story was. I mean, it left me, you know, a little. It is unnerving. I mean,
Don't let the premise of talking animals fool you. This book will get into the horror aspect of it pretty deep sometimes. And
it will gut punch you. I mean, there's just, you know,
that too. Like it does not shy away from some pretty hard subject matter and some twists that you don't see coming. Hell, that first story, Stray, is. It's one of those, when you get to the end of it, you're like, you know, damn.
this series is like an emotional roller coaster. I mean, it really hits those high moments, and then it can drag you right down into some really dark moments too. And it does such a good balance of the two. It's not like, you know, it hits you in the face so much with it. It's just kind of, I mean, it's just well done. It's well played out. And I feel, like you said, if you're a fan of any of these genres, if you're a fan of the supernatural genre, this should be right up your alley too. I mean, it's just, I can tell by the writing that, you know, there's some knowledge going on, and they're using that knowledge, you know, to craft these stories. It's not, you know, it doesn't feel like it's just, I don't know. I've watched so many supernatural shows where there's a lot of stuff you just kind of go, okay, where did you pull that from? You know, this just kind of feels kind of original and kind of fresh.
It does. And that's a good way to look at it. Like, this is something that's very different from what most fans of, like, supernatural horror, supernatural mysteries might be used to. But if you're one of those that enjoyed, you know, your fables type stories, this is another one that,
yeah,
I would highly recommend. And I mean that as in, like, literal fables, not the comic book series. Although I think that fans of the fables Vertigo series would probably enjoy this too.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it kind of has kind of a crossover as far as fans are concerned.
I could absolutely see people jumping on that, and it's funny that you had mentioned before about the doing an animated feature, because at one time there was going to be a CG animated film adaptation.
Wow!
Like Real FX Creative Studio with Andrew Adamson. He was scheduled to produce it. Darren LeMake was attached to write the screenplay, and Shane Acker was supposed to direct. That was back in 2013 when they announced that, and here we are, you know, 3 years later, and who knows if any actual movement has happened on that. That was the last we heard of it.
I'd rather see a traditional animated I mean, no offense to CGI. I think this comic would be more a traditional animated style would, I think, be better than, you know, a high-tech CGI.
I do too, because it's nothing about it says like it should be CGI'd. It feels like, you know, that old school Don Bluth type animation would actually work really well.
We hadn't really touched on the art, but the art in the book is just phenomenal. I mean, it really does fit. You know, when you talk about how the writing, the words, and the story and the art, just they connect perfectly. There's no, this is one of those books where you're going to get both. It fits perfectly, and it's beautiful. The artwork is just astounding.
It really is. Jill Thompson has, you know, quite a reputation in comics. Like, she's done plenty of stuff. She actually just recently did a Wonder Woman, like, original graphic novel for Wonder Woman's 75th anniversary. I bought a copy of it. I haven't actually had a chance to read it yet. But her art style is a signature style. She uses watercolors, which is something that you don't see anybody really doing in modern comics. Mm-hmm. And she does it. I mean, everybody's kind of gone digital these days, but she's still doing a painted style artwork. And whenever you, if you look at the artwork in Beast of Burden, it has kind of it's that old school watercolor, but it almost has a Norman Rockwell thing going on too.
Yeah, it does. I mean, when you look at each panel and you look at the colors and just the way the animals are drawn, I mean, there's emotion that's conveyed in each one of those panels. And it, to me, like you said,
especially on Pugsley's face.
Yeah, Pugsley's face. I mean,
that pug scrunch. He's got the pug scrunch perfect.
Yeah, you don't have that in a lot of books these days. I mean, it like I said, when you have that meeting of both the written word and the illustrations that meld so good together. I mean, that's what Beast of Burden is. I mean, you're getting everything. I haven't run into anybody who didn't like this series. Especially for this time of year, you know, I mean, it's something, if you get a chance, hit your local comic shop up. If they don't have it, see if they can order it. If they can't get it, I think you can check it probably out on Amazon or, find it somewhere else online, but.
And if you go through Amazon, make sure you go to the placetobenation.com website, find the Amazon link there. Click on that and follow it into Amazon, because if you do that, you're helping out the website. You're helping us get a little bit of extra money to help pay some of these bills and keep all these amazing podcasts coming your way. That'd be a big favor to us. And, you know, you might find this wonderful book, Beast of Burden, at a really great deal. In fact, I'm quite certain that you'll find a great deal on Beast of Burden there. And you will be... you will be absolutely happy with this purchase. I mean, if you're a fan of all the things that we've talked about up to now, this is going to be your book. Now, the only negative thing I can say about this so far, Kelly, is that this is the only collection of Beast of Burden that's out there.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And there have been more stories since this.
Yeah, they've done a few more, and I'm hoping that maybe they'll end up collecting them at some point. And I really would love to see them continue to do more stories.
Be it more miniseries or be it the wonderful
however
thing.
You want to do it.
Yeah, however you want to put it out there. I mean, they've done, they've continued an interconnected story, and that's one thing that we have to say is that even though they are self-contained in each issue, there is kind of a story that's running throughout all of them. But it's more a story of connected characters than it is like an overarching story, like an overarching plot.
Yeah.
The plots come and go, but it's the characters that they are built around. And that's the very heart of this book, is building it on the characters and the characters' familiarity with each other. So that's where the consistency comes in, is they'll reference adventures that they've had. They'll, you know, talk to each other like they've known each other for years, because they have. And
dog years.
And dog years. Yeah, so it's even longer. Oh, God, poor Pugsley. he's such a bitter little bastard. And
yeah, he has some of the better lines, in I think, as far as the way the scripting's done. I think they give him a lot of the good lines because it's fitting for him.
They really do. Like, if you're a Green Lantern fan, if Guy Gardner were a bit cowardly, he would be Pugsley.
Yeah,
that's how he comes off to me. You know, one thing that they also did to have a little fun with Beasts of Burden, they crossed it over with Hellboy for an issue.
Yeah, I just recently reread that. again, shout out to my friend Joe who lent me his copy. That was like just a match made in hell. I mean, you cannot get a better combo of, you know, the Beast of Burden dogs and cat fighting the supernatural alongside the premier supernatural combatant Hellboy. Who also, I mean, he's an animal lover. We know that.
Oh, yeah.
And
he loves his cats.
He loves his cats. And, I mean, it just, that issue itself was just perfect.
It was. And, it was written by Evan Dorkin, but Mike Mignola was also on that issue because, I mean, Hellboy is his. So
yeah,
anytime he's going to appear, it's going to be written by him. And mm-hmm. he... I mean, Jill Thompson, of course, did the artwork, as usual. She does the artwork on all of Beast of Burden.
I can't see anybody else doing it.
I really couldn't either. So. Like, if they said they were going to do an ongoing or do another miniseries, I'd be like, Evan Dorkin absolutely has to write it. But if you don't get Jill Thompson, it's like, you know, it's only half the story. Like, no,
it's like getting Rob Liefeld to do it. That is a horror story.
Yeah. Then nobody will buy the book, Kelly. We're trying to sell people the idea that I don't want to see a barrel-chested cat.
Right. I just had to poke fun at Rob.
Of course.
Every once or twice a year, you just got to poke fun at him. So.
There was a kind of, sort of, second collection that came out called Neighborhood Watch. But what that did was it collected... stories from Dark Horse Presents number 4, number 6, and number 8, because they had stories called Food Run, Storytime, and View from the Hill. I bought this in the collection, the Neighborhood Watch collection, but since they're short stories, it's not really like that long.
Yeah.
And there was also Hunters and Gatherers, which was more of a focus on the cat characters. I think Orphan was actually one of the main characters of that story. And that... What the Cat Dragged In was actually the story that featured Orphan. And I want to say the Getaway Kid, who is a character who is so, like, great in the Animal Rights collection. And I wanted to see more of him because he's a funny cat character, and he's a great foil. Like, he's a great sidekick type character to play off Orphan.
Yeah.
So if you're a cat lover, you're absolutely going to love both of those characters. And that was the last thing. That was actually published earlier this year. It was published in May. And there are two other stories that have been talked about, but they don't have release dates. It's called Beasts of Burden, The Presence of Others, number 1 and number 2. So that would be the next chapters in that, but it's who knows when those stories are actually going to come out. I know that Evan Dorkin has talked about them, but there is no firmed up release date. But this stuff is very sporadic because the first Beast of Burden story was actually Stray was actually published in 2003.
Yeah, I mean, that's that was before I opened my shop in 2005. So that's. Yeah.
Those first three stories, actually, there was one published. They published like one a year from 2003 to 2006, and it took until 2009. Like 2009, they had the 4-issue miniseries, and I think in early 2010 they collected the hardcover together and collected all of that stuff. And then they did the Hellboy crossover in 2010. They did like a couple of story that the Dark Horse Presents stories they did between 2011 and 2012. But then there was nothing through all of 2013. There was that one issue, Hunters and Gatherers, in 2014, and then nothing in 2015. And What the Cat Dragged In came out earlier this year. So who knows when we will get more Beasts of Burden, because as you can see, from 2003 to now, it's taken that long just to get this much of it out. And a lot of that probably has to do with Jill Thompson's schedule, because she's very busy. And she does like so many different things. And for any of our wrestling fans who may be listening, she designed Daniel Bryan's in-ring gear way back when. That the dragon design was actually something that she did. And I do believe that, yes, that was the in-ring attire that he wore when he won the WWE title at WrestleMania 30. So, Jill Thompson is a far-reaching talent. She has been in so many corners of the entertainment industry. So you probably have seen her work and didn't even realize it. But that's one of those that, you know, Kelly, we talk about, we want that ongoing series. I know that we mentioned it when the miniseries was running, that an ongoing would be so great, but thinking about the scheduling issues and how long it takes to get some of this stuff done, I wonder if it would really work.
I think about it in retrospect, and I think it's pretty, it's kind of perfect the way Beast of Burden does come out. I think because an ongoing series, you know, here's my thoughts on ongoing series, just to kind of touch on it for just a minute. To those listening, and to, you know, and I think Russell will agree with me, the days of an ongoing series are pretty much gone. Yeah, we have ongoing series, but they're really not. They're really almost like maybe 10, 15, 20 issues, maybe 30. You'll never see the numbers that you used to see. Where I grew up, where, you know, X-Men got up in the 500s and you know, the Avengers were, you know, the same. I take some precedent that, like, Action and Detective have gone to the original numbers. So we will continue to see those, but that's an exception.
Do you think they reset at 1,000?
I would hope not. I'd hope that they would just continue. I don't see a point. I mean, if you're going to go ahead and just hit that 1,000 mark, just keep going. Because, I mean, Marvel's never going to go back to their original numbers. DC will do the same. They're not going to. Ongoing series is kind of a myth to me. It's just like, okay, yeah, it just means that it's going to continue until the you know, they deem it either it's not making enough money, or for whatever reason they decide to stop. And, you know, with Beast of Burden, I'm kind of glad that it's not, because I've seen, you know, books that have gone probably way past their due date. And, you know, we were talking, I think, the other day about how writers, I mean, they're writing so many books, they're just, you know, just boom, 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 knocking them out. Eventually, they're going to hit a dry spell. And I'd rather read good quality material here and there than, you know, hit these marks where I'm reading mediocre material through a story arc that I may not really enjoy to hopefully get to a point where he's got his magic back and he's writing good again. And you know, like I said, I miss the days of seeing those numbers. But, you know, from the time I was a shop owner and I saw the writing on the wall, it's just not going to happen. We're past that. That's not ever going to be a thing anymore, because both Marvel and DC, ever so often, they're just going to drop back down to issue one and start back over. Like I said, hopefully not with Action and Detective. They'll keep those numbers, but, you know.
Well, it's it really is all about the quality of story. Like, like, you got to keep that up. Even if you don't keep the numbering, it's far more important to make sure that you're putting out a quality book that people actually want to read. And even if you're not putting it out on a monthly basis, and I think that that's exactly where Beast of Burden probably should be, is it's not a book that necessarily lends itself to monthly storytelling. And maybe the reason the stories have been so strong is because Evan and Jill had plenty of time to develop them, to really pour them over and to make them into something better than your standard monthly comic, because that is something that Beast of Burden definitely is not. It is not your standard run-of-the-mill monthly comic. This is a story that's meant to be read. You know, you can read it one-off if you want to. It's almost like a good storybook, honestly. Like, if you got kids that, you know, can handle this type of stuff, or maybe they love this kind of stuff. There are those kids out there that love this kind of horror. I think this would be a fantastic thing to read them or read with them, you know, for this wonderful Halloween season. This is a perfect book for that. I also think this is a good book for the animal lover in your life. Like, if you know somebody who loves their dog, loves their cat, they will thank you for this. I know that I grew up with dogs and cats, and never once thought any of them were quite smart enough to solve crime or solve, you know, supernatural mysteries quite like these dogs do. But you know what? Animals can fool you.
Again,
I'm thinking back to some of the dumber dogs that I grew up with. I don't think they would have made it. I don't think they would have lasted long on Burden Hill.
No.
Maybe my parents' current dog, Jo, she's a German Shepherd. Maybe she'd do all right. My friend Rachel has a puggle named Mila, who is easily the world's most adorable dog. And yeah, she might do okay on Burden Hill. She'd be the one getting in trouble.
I think my late dog Dobby would have. He's a mutt. I think he may have been able to hold his own there in the Burden Hill area.
I'm reasonably sure that at some point in his life, Dobby was a wise dog.
He probably was. He probably was.
Cast fire.
Him being a mutt, I mean, just, you know, being a little mutt and such was, you know, I have a thing for mutts. So, I mean, nothing against purebred dogs, but, I mean, I've had mutts most of my life, and they're very interesting dogs to have. They're very long lived for the most part. And my first dog was a mutt, and he lived to 19, which is, you know, kind of a rough spot for a dog. And we had to put him down because of, you know, he had cancer. But I mean, he was a great dog, and, you know, they got him when I was born. So, I mean, it was at 19, I had to watch him go down, and it was pretty rough. But, you know, this kind of Beast of Burden and reading about these characters and these animals made me think a lot about my dogs that I had growing up. And I think that's what the connection was for me. I was like, this is really, really, this is good.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
It hit home. I mean, it hits home in a lot of ways.
It does.
Anybody that has ever had a pet, I think, is going to find a story in here that, you know, tugs at the heartstrings a little bit, something that you relate to and will feel very personal. And that's a testament to the writing and to the art, because, especially in A Dog and His Boy.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. Yeah, there are moments in that really hit home, you know, like this is what it feels like to really have a bond with your dog. Mm-hmm. And you see that, like, there have been continuing effects from that story too. Like, you see how it affects Ace, the husky, who is very much like the stoic hero type character in the story. You may not think much of him as, you know, a character, because he really does have that kind of Chris Evans, Captain America thing going on. Mm-hmm. But it's in that story that you really see his softer side, and you see him, like, really dealing with a true connection to a human being that we haven't seen in the series before, and then him dealing with extreme loss by the end of it.
Yeah. So it's, and him really getting the proverbial, I mean, he got messed up.
Yeah, he did. And but there was some benefit to that.
Yeah.
It's hinted that it's kind of a dark benefit, but and it really is. But that's another thing about the series, is that as lighthearted as it is and as like funny as the premise can be, it really does go dark sometimes.
Yeah, right into dark areas.
It likes to play around with the Fable label, but it also likes to remind you that this is a horror series too.
Yeah.
And when it does, it can be a real shot to the pills. Ain't no neutering happening. So we're just, and Bearden Hill, dogs neuter you.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's our take on Beasts of Burden, which has been it's a fantastic read. It's something that Kelly and I both highly recommend you go and check out. And I hope you will. I hope after listening to us talk on about it that you'll be inspired to want to check that book out and read more about these characters. Try it out, because it's something very different, and it fits perfectly in with this this wonderful Halloween time of year. Really, any time of year, honestly. I remember reading this. It was summertime, actually, the first time I read any of this stuff. So that's... Well, that wasn't summer. It was like... early fall whenever the first one came out, and then it continued on into like the Thanksgiving and Christmas time era. So it doesn't really matter. Any time of year is a good time to read Beasts of Burden. It's a fantastic series. More people need to read it. And hey, you know what? If more people will read these series, if more people will go out and buy the graphic novel, that might inspire them to try and get more of it out a little sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it's definitely one of those books that I think overall, I think it does fit into the miss category that this book probably got looked over.
People go into the comic shop looking for, and nothing against it, because I do it. I go and look for the superhero books, too. I got a hell of a pull list, as you heard in the first half, but and that's not even a quarter of it. But there are these little books like this, too, that will surprise you, and that's exactly what Beasts of Burden did. When I picked it up, it was just one of those, like, knocked me on my ass at how good and how surprisingly good it was. Because Kelly, you and I have talked about this before, Dark Horse publishes some good stuff and some stuff that you wouldn't expect.
This is
Dark Horse ain't just Hellboy. But there's a lot of good stuff happening over there. So, just because it ain't Marvel and DC doesn't mean you should ignore it. Look at some of this stuff. Try it out. And while you're at it, go order you a copy of Beasts of Burden Animal Rights. It's the hardcover collection. It's only $19.99 cover price, but you can probably find it for cheaper than that on Amazon. And in the meantime, that brings us to the end of our talk about Beasts of Burden. Kelly, any final thoughts on this book that you want to leave the folks with?
No, I think I've said everything, that I can say about the book. It just, like you just said a minute ago, if you fall into any of these categories that we've spoke about and you haven't read this series, then find a way to get a copy of it and check it out. You won't be disappointed. It is definitely worth the time, the money. It's a phenomenal read, and hopefully we'll see more stories come out in the future.
I echo every bit of that. I hope that Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson get back together and turn us out some more Beasts of Burden. Even if it's not coming out on a regular basis, when it does come out, it is worth every penny of the cover price that you'll pay for it. So, with that said, we hope you guys have enjoyed our talk on this, and we hope that you'll be going out and getting Beasts of Burden. And if you do, make sure you come on over to Facebook, where you can find our Place to Be Nation comics group. You can join in there. Hopefully you'll find the link to this podcast, and you can tell us all about your experiences with Beasts of Burden. Maybe you're already a fan. Maybe you're a new reader to it. But, you know, come on over. Tell us about it. Join up the group. It's an open forum. We love talking comics with all of our listeners. And if you guys have a suggestion for Mist and the Malign, a book that maybe people slept on that you think deserves a little more credit, or maybe a book that people hate on all the time and you're like, man, I just don't get it, you know, hit us up with that. We take those suggestions. We take that very seriously, and we would love to talk about those books. I mean, we'll go and seek them out, you know, if we've never read them. But, you know, beyond that, you can also find us on Twitter. You can find me at Russell_Sellers. And you can find Kelly at HKP2814. You know, follow us on Twitter. Hit us up. Tell us what you're reading. Tell us what you're watching right now with all the superhero shows back. You know, we're watching them. You know, we want to talk about it. We'll talk about all this stuff. Although, if you try to talk to Kelly about Inhumans, he's not going to be happy about it. Just fair warning.
You know what? If they want to talk classic Inhuman stories, man, I'm all there. But if you know, want to discuss this whole Inhumans versus X-Men thing, and you know, I'm going to pick that up. I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to read it. I may not care about the tie-ins. I may just go in and just check it out. But I'm not really looking forward to it.
And he's not going to be happy about it.
I'm not going to be happy.
The begrudging dollar. Like, the take
begrudging, here's, take this take money. Take this crap. I'm going to read it. You know, knowing full well, you know, if Black Bolt wanted to, he'd just scream and blow all the X-Men up or something. I mean, just come on. But really,
what we want to see is Scarlet Witch standing up and just saying, no more Inhumans.
Yeah.
Just do that. Just a massive except Ms. Marvel. No more Inhumans except Ms. Marvel. She's cool. She can stay. And I don't know. Maybe I almost don't want her to get rid of. I know Gold Balls is a mutant. I don't want her to necessarily get rid of him because that name is just too much. And we've gone this whole episode without mentioning Gold Balls. But
had to.
But nope. Right here at the end, Gold Balls. Sorry, had to get it in.
Not to be confused with any Austin Power villain. I mean,
no.
You know, let's just put that there. But
But a gold member and Gold Balls crossover is now a thing I want. It will probably never happen, but you know, but I can dream, right? But anyway, that brings us to the end of another show, and we've already plugged all these like great podcasts that you can find right here on Place to Be Nation Pop. We thank you again for listening to us on the Sellers Points podcast.
Yes, thank you.
It's been a great time talking Beasts of Burden with my favorite Ginger Bear and yours. So, Kelly, we got to tease him with the next month worth of episodes because we're going back to the top and bottom five, but this time we're going to get a little animated with it, and we're going to be bringing you the top five animated comic book shows of all time and the bottom five animated comic book shows of all time. Look for that in November when we come back. And, of course, December, we're going to have a little something fun for all the people. When we're finally going to get the confrontation you've all been waiting for, when Mr. Greg Phillips joins us for our Guide to Superman, and we finally have it out, the debate you've all been waiting for, Mon-El versus Superman. I've been waiting for this my whole life, Kelly. I'm kidding.
Hey, all I can tell Greg is, hey, Mon-El is on Supergirl right now.
So Superman.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. It's Superman.
Oh, don't be that way, Kelly.
No. Look, let me say this. In all honesty, Superman on Supergirl, that's beautiful.
He get it right.
He got it right, and I'm happy. And I mean, I know. I mean, I'm rooting for a character that probably not a lot of people care about.
But he's your character, Kelly.
He's my character. And you know what? Greg may not know this, but I'm also a huge fan of Mr. Majestic, or Lord Majestros from Wildstorm, who is, again, a Superman-esque character.
We're about to see more of him coming up pretty soon, I think.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
When Warren Ellis, you know, is launching Wildstorm, which I'm in for that. But anyway, that's another subject for another time. Looking forward in December, there might be a little Watchmen stuff coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We got some of that brewing with us and some of our other Place to Be Nation cohorts. So. Teasers, spoilers, no spoilers yet, but that brings us to a conclusion. Thank you guys again for joining us. It's been a fun time, great time talking Beast of Burden. Kelly?
Yes.
It was a good time, and we will see you guys next time right here on Place to Be Nation Pop.
Later.